Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. It feels so good to be back. It's been a minute. We had a few technical difficulties that prevented us from recording lately, but that's okay. Can't stop, won't stop, you know what I'm saying? No, that was corny. I'm gonna delete that out. But still, we're back at it again. It's JB Hicks on the Hip Hop Sports Report podcast. Thank you for listening. Thank you for allowing us to bless your ears with knowledge about football and music and basketball and life and life circumstances and anything that may be coming up in your lives or anything that you may need some guidance on. We have it here on this podcast, and or at least I like to think that we do. I just say that stuff to gas myself up into doing this. That's the only way I can get out of bed and do this every day. But no, I'm kidding, y'all. I really enjoy doing it, obviously, and I love talking to y'all, and I love your feedback as well. So please feel free to get at me at Twitter or on Twitter at HHS Report, and please by all means hit up the website hiphopsportsreport.com, where we talk about the latest in hip hop music and the world of sports. Obviously, nothing bigger in the world of sports right now than the NFL playoffs. I think we're going to go heavy on football on this one, y'all. We're going to go heavy into the football tip. I got a very special guest joining us momentarily here in the program. I actually got two guests that are going to be joining me today. We're recording this late on Monday night on January the 20th. But we're going to have two special guests, and I'm looking forward to you all meeting them. But, I think we're going to go heavy on football this time around, and then maybe next week we might go heavy into the music side with the Grammys coming up next weekend. And, we're in the off week of the NFL playoffs before the Super Bowl, so we might go that route. We might go heavy into the basketball and hip-hop route next time. But this time I think we're going to go all football. It's going to be the all-football edition of the Hip Hop Sports Report Podcast. Word to my man Adam Clark. So, yeah, we're going to start with the NFC Championship game. We were all over the NFC, y'all. The NFC period, we had that on lock from jump at the beginning of the season. I'm not gonna shy away from that. It, pretty much everything that we thought would happen, or I thought would happen in the NFC, happened this year, or so it appeared. I mean, I didn't get every playoff team right, and I didn't get every. I think I got every game right except for one in the playoffs. Been picking those, but. I do have to say I was pretty solid on most of the stuff that I had going down in the NFC. If you read the website, you would have seen our article from this past weekend where I referenced that in the preseason we had the Seahawks and the 49ers meeting up in Seattle for the NFC Championship. And that's exactly what ended up happening. And in the article also referencing that the Seattle defense was superior to the 49ers defense, even though the 49ers defense is still very, very good. Nobody has a better defense than the Seattle Seahawks, especially playing up in Seattle. And so, that was a critical part of, I think, the storyline of the NFC Championship game this year. Obviously, the big play of the game is made by Richard Sherman down at the end. Colin Kaepernick driving the 49ers down when they were down six. They had a chance to win it. He throws an interception to Sherman. Kaepernick actually threw three interceptions in the – excuse me, had three turnovers in the fourth quarter, I believe on the final three possessions of the game. And the Seahawks shut out the 49ers in the fourth quarter. If you ask me, that's where the game was decided, because the only unit in the entire NFL that can stack up to the Seattle defense, ironically, is the Denver Broncos offense, and we'll get to that momentarily. Aside from that, the Seattle defense is as good as it gets, and they were just a cut above when it mattered most. Their team was down going into the fourth quarter. All right, wait a minute, I'll take that back. They were down 17-13 going into the fourth, and their defense needed to make plays. You know, Kaepernick had rushed for 130 yards in the game, and they needed to make some plays on defense if they were going to win it. They got a strip sack, they got an interception, and then they got another interception to seal the deal. And, you know, that frankly was the difference. I mean, a lot of people are coming down on Kaepernick today, and it wasn't his best game, but I'm here giving more credit to Seattle than I am disparaging the 49ers performance, because I thought that Seattle, you know, when the chips were down and their defense needed to make plays, because their offense is only going to make but so many plays, and when their defense needed to make plays to turn this game around and to save the game and send their team to the Super Bowl, that's exactly what they did. The big star of the game was Richard Sherman, who would get my vote, my hypothetical vote for Defensive Player of the Year. He made the Defensive Player of the Year to this point when he deflected Kaepernick's pass in the end zone with about 30 seconds left intended for Michael Crabtree. Kaepernick had Crabtree in man coverage against Sherman, who is recognized by most people as the best corner, cover corner in the league right now, which is interesting because every few years it's a new guy that's always the top dog when it comes to cover corners. And it looks like Revis' time is already up, and it looks like Sherman took a spot, you know what I'm saying? But Richard Sherman, never shy, always brash. He made the play, deflected the pass, and it was another individual by the name of, I would love to tell you his name. His name was Smith, was his last name, I believe. Waiting. Malcolm Smith. Yes, it was Malcolm Smith that made the interception and saved the game on a deflection by Richard Sherman. Of course, after the play transpired, Sherman, stunts for the crowd a little bit, runs over to Michael Crabtree, gives him a fake, you know what I'm saying, a half-hearted attempt at shaking his hand and saying good game, gave him a little pat on the butt or whatever. And then afterwards, Sherman goes out and says, you know, oh, I was just trying to say good game. You know, he comes off real coy, you know, clearly being disingenuous because nobody's buying that, Richard Sherman. We all know that you were trying to be an a-hole in that moment, and you succeeded. And that's fine, because lately you've been succeeding at a lot of the things you set out to do. In that moment, you set out to be an a-hole, and you won once again. Even though he tried to deny it today, nobody seems to really be buying that in the national media, and I ain't buying it either personally. But the bigger headline afterwards was when he went up to Aaron Andrews and had this to say about Michael Crabtree. But it's about 30 seconds after the game had ended. They flagged down Richard Sherman and they asked him about the final play that sealed the game. And never one to bite his tongue, Richard Sherman had this to say. Aaron Andrews didn't know what to say. She was stunned. She was absolutely stunned. I'll send it back to you. She didn't know what to say. That was hilarious. But beyond that, Richard Sherman, and it's funny too, I thought Richard Sherman was going to curse. I really thought he was. I thought he was going to drop an N-bomb in there. Like, he was about to say, man, they said, she says, who was talking about you? He said, Crabtree. You're like, listen again, listen closely. Yeah, that's what he said. But nevertheless, a lot of criticism has gone away of Richard Sherman today. And he's not going to get any criticism here. I don't see what was so wrong with this. First of all, Colin Kaepernick made a decision to try one of the best corners in the league, even though it was in man coverage. I think he, you know, he knew what he was getting himself into. And after the game, again, Kaepernick said, I'll take one-on-one coverage with Crab any day of the week, and I think he's justified in feeling that way. But you know, Richard Sherman is an all-pro. He was an all-pro last year, and he led the league in interceptions this year, and you know, the guy likes to run his mouth, which brings me to the next point. He's always been a very boisterous guy. He's always, you know, he's never hesitated to say what's on his mind. And he's an antagonizer. He likes to get under people's skin. He gets under the skin of the opposing receivers. He likes to get on TV and run his mouth. You can ask Skip Bayless. And if you don't know what that's about, you can go ahead and YouTube that, and you'll be entertained for about 6 or 7 minutes. But this is who Richard Sherman is. He's never been anything but this since he burst onto the scene in the NFL. He's always been a very vocal guy. And so he just sent his team to the Super Bowl, y'all. The Super Bowl. It don't get no bigger than the Super Bowl. He made the play that helped send his team there, with 30 seconds left in the game, and he's at home, and they just corralled him off the sideline after Russell Wilson took a knee to end the game. And they asked him right off, you know, right out the gate, you know, tell us what happened on that last play. And this is right after Crabtree mushed him in the face. So you know he's not, you know he's going to go in on Crabtree. I mean, he has no reason but to go in on him at that point. I mean, he already talks the talk. He turns out on this play, he walked the walk. And now his team's going to the Super Bowl. And you expect him not to act a fool? Come on, y'all. Like, it's just real, you know. I mean, he was disingenuous about the whole, you know, shaking Crabtree's hand and pat on the butt thing. But for anybody to really criticize Richard Sherman today, it's just being a lame. Like, I mean, this is just who he is. He's always been this way. And it was in the heat of the moment. And what can you really say about that? You know, he made the play until the victor goes to spoils. Even if it was very much, you know, WWF-ish, you know, from 20 years ago. But even still, I thought it was great television, and everybody else deserved it. The only two things that he did that I didn't care for was the again, the whole thing with the shaking of the hand and the, you know, pat on the butt. And then the other part was he gave Kaepernick the choke sign. Like, he put his hands around his throat and, like, made it seem like Kaepernick choked, which I didn't really understand, because you're, like, putting yourself down, right? Because that makes it seem like Kaepernick just made a mistake in the moment. Like, not when you choke, that means that the pressure got to you and you made a mistake. If I'm Richard Sherman, I'm saying, like, no, he didn't choke. He made the decision that he thought was best, and that was a foolish decision, and I just took him down. Like, that would be my stance if I'm Richard Sherman. I'm not going to say he threw up the choke sign. The choke sign means that Kaepernick was in control of the outcome of that play, and he just threw a bad pass because he got caught up in the moment or something. If I'm Richard Sherman, I'm like, no, he didn't choke. I'm just awesome. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's how I would have approached it. But either way, again, he made the plays, and the Seahawks defense stepped up when they needed him to. They completely shut down Frank Gore. I didn't get Frank Gore's numbers in that game. I think he had, what was it? How many yards rushing did he have? I'll tell you. Frank Gore, 11 carries for 14 yards. That's just, I mean, what can you say? I mean, the 49ers have had the best offensive line in football for about the last 3 years running, at least. You have to give the Seattle defense credit for shutting down Frank Gore. I mean, they couldn't contain Kaepernick, but not really many people can. But Frank Gore was a key component to this game, and he's been a key cog in the 49ers' offensive attack for years. And they completely took him out of the game. Meanwhile, on the other end, Marshawn Lynch, he had 22 carries for 109 yards. That's 5 yards a clip. Had the big 40-yard touchdown run, and that kind of set the tone. I mean, I think Marshawn Lynch is a free agent after this season or something like that, or his contract might be up, and there's rumors that he might not come back or whatever. Bring him back. I mean, like, I don't know how much money he's going to be worth to them, because he's not a young running back. He's probably about 27 right now, something like that, which in running back years isn't young, but that guy sets the tone for this team, especially on offense. But, you know, from going back a few years ago when he had the whole the Beast Quake or whatever they call it, the Darren Sharper, hold my dick, like that run, like that created the identity for the Seattle team and the 12th man and all that. All that stuff was born on that day off that run by Marshawn Lynch 3 years ago. So it doesn't make any sense to me why you would essentially get rid of the heart and soul of your team. Okay, the Steelers, they didn't get rid of the bus when he was getting old. You know what I'm saying? They kept him around because they understood that he meant more to them than even his statistics showed. And not only is Marshawn Lynch's statistics still on point, but I think he's the heart and soul of that team too. So I would not let that guy get away. But one of the takeaway that I had from this game was, besides the fact that the Richard Sherman Michael Crabtree confrontation was something that we kind of predicted in the article that we wrote going into the championship weekend, it seemed like that a lot of national media and people of that ilk were saying that the 49ers were the better team after the game, and they were saying the 49ers, you know, the better team lost the game yesterday. I think the better team won both games yesterday, and the Seattle Seahawks, they had a better regular season record. They've destroyed the 49ers at every game up in Seattle the last 2 years. They earned the right to have this game in Seattle this year. the game in San Francisco this year was close. You know, I mean, the Niners won it, but it was still a close game. And I never got the impression watching that game that San Francisco was better than Seattle. So at no point this year did I feel San Francisco was better than Seattle. They had done nothing to prove that they were better than Seattle. I just think people kind of got a little drunk off the Niners juice because they played two games in the playoffs and Seattle only played one. And Seattle wasn't dominant in that one game. But San Francisco wasn't all that dominant either, especially against the Packers. You know, I think they won that on a last-second field goal. So, you know, the 49ers are a great team. They're probably one of the three best teams in the league. But I do believe the better team won that game yesterday. And moving along to the AFC. Now, for all the patting on the back that I've done for myself in regards to the NFC, the AFC, man. Hey, you can't win them all, right? You know what I'm saying? Tom Brady knows that, right? So yeah, definitely got the pick wrong. Got everything I pretty much said about the Denver Broncos all year wrong. I mean, I knew they were a very good team all along. I just did not expect them to get to the Super Bowl. I expected them to come up short, in large part due to the fact that Peyton Manning historically has come up short many times in the postseason. I have to take my hat off to Peyton today, though. He was on point yesterday. And I mean, he was great. He had exactly 400 yards passing. I think he only threw 11 incompletions yesterday. And he was in total command, just like he was against San Diego. He was in total command against New England. The stats exactly 32 of 43 for 400 yards, two scores, no interceptions, no fumbles, a passer rating of 118.4. A stellar performance from Peyton Manning against Bill Belichick, a guy who has been in his head, or so it appears, much of his career. He exercised those demons yesterday, and so I have to tip my hat to Peyton Manning for his performance. Now, the one thing that I will say is I just find it interesting that everything seemed to align for the Denver Broncos this year, specifically in this game even. Because even though they're playing their arch nemesis, the Patriots, and a very capable group, headlined by Tom Brady and Bill Belichick, of course, the Patriots were ravaged by injuries. We all know that. And Denver had some injuries too, so I'm not, you know, overlooking that. But the Patriots were ravaged by injuries on both sides of the ball. Aqib Talib, who's their top... He's basically the top defensive player they have left since Mayo and Wolfork went down during the season with injuries that ended their years. Aqib Talib was the best guy that they had on that side of the ball. And then he goes down, much like he did in the AFC Championship game last year. The same thing happened. He got hurt early in the game, and it changed the dynamic of the game. It's crazy how that happened, but it did. Wes Welker is catching a little bit of heat today. He looks like he took out Aqib Talib on that route, on that rub route, but I don't know if it was intentional or not. I think it was a little bit intentional, but I don't know that he necessarily tried to hurt him for the game. But that's what happened, and it was a noticeable change after Talib went out of the lineup. You saw Denver's passing game opened up completely. They were able to flourish a little bit more that way. We saw Demaryius Thomas, who was matched up with Talib for the majority of the game. He only caught one pass in the first quarter. In the first quarter and a half or whatever it was when Talib was covering him. After that, Thomas went off and he finished the game with 7 catches for 134 yards and a touchdown. And Denver's entire passing game, for that matter, opened up after Talib went out. Now, I'm not saying that they would have lost the game had Talib not gotten hurt, but it's interesting to note that their top cover corner that was left in the game, you know, because after Chris Harris got hurt last week, their top corner that was left in the game was Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie, arguably their best corner on the team. He got hurt in the first quarter, I believe. He came back in the game. Talib got hurt, and he was finished for the game. I think that had some impact on what transpired after that. Furthermore, you had the fact that Denver was hosting the game, which you could argue that they maybe shouldn't have been, considering the fact that the Patriots pretty much got robbed twice this year of games, or at least the opportunity to win two games that would have bolstered their record up to 13-3, which would have given them home field advantage for this game because of the fact that they have the tiebreaker over Denver. Again, I do understand that the Patriots got lucky a couple times, and they got lucky against the Browns, and they got a lucky flag in that game. And so I understand this stuff kind of balances out over the course of the season, but it was very easy for us to look at what the Patriots accomplished in the regular season and then notice that those two games, that Jets game and that Panthers game, and say, you know what? If they win one of those games that it looked like the referees kind of might have taken away from them, this AFC Championship game might be played in Denver. So it really does kind of change that dynamic a little bit. I think if the game is played in Foxborough versus in Denver, the game is played in Denver. It's a gorgeous day, 60 degrees and sunny in January in Denver, Colorado. I don't know if that's ever happened. And everything just fell into place for the Broncos. It did, you know? So, again, I don't want to... It sounds like I'm discrediting Peyton Manning, and I'm not, because he was sensational, and he can't control any of that stuff, you know? He had no control over any of that stuff. He just went out there and did his job. So I'm not going to hate on him for that. But it's just interesting to note that everything that could have gone right for the Broncos going into that game went right for them. And that's kind of why I said in the article from last weekend before the game that there was no excuse for them to lose against New England. And to their credit, they took care of business. They were the better team, and they deserved the W yesterday. The defense was fantastic. They completely took LeGarrette Blount out of the game, 5 carries for 6 yards, after Blount ran for like 140 or 160 last week and 4 touchdowns. That guy was a ghost yesterday. I mean, they played mistake-free football, Denver did. A lot of Peyton's past playoff failures can be traced to these turnovers that he has. Either he turns the ball over in crucial spots, or he has these 3 and 4 turnover games that just doom his team from the start. And Peyton was mistake-free yesterday, and you can't take anything away from him. I think the two biggest plays of the game that stand out in my mind that I think really haunted New England, the overthrow by Tom Brady to Julian Edelman in the first half after that play-action fake. That should have been a touchdown, and Brady just missed him. He just flat-out missed him. And against an offense like Denver, especially on the road, you cannot afford to miss plays like that. And I think Tom knew it when he threw it. And then the other one was the third down in the first half. It was third and long, like third and 15 or 20. And Peyton somehow found Welker. He threw one of those classic Peyton Manning ducks that just somehow lands precisely where it was supposed to land. But it just looked like garbage, but somehow it gets there, and that's exactly what he did, and he was right on the money to Welker on a third and long that kept that drive alive, and I believe that led to the first touchdown of the game. So those were the two big plays that I think really hurt New England in the first half, and it ended up contributing to them being in this hole that they weren't able to dig out of. Incidentally, Brady was actually pretty good yesterday, 24-38, 277, a touchdown, no interceptions. He's actually catching a little bit of heat today, too, for his performance. I thought he played pretty well, y'all. I mean, he moved the ball, especially in the second half when they had to. They had no running game to work with. The defense was giving up points, and everything pretty much fell on Tom Brady's shoulders. He was not pressured a ton, but he did, you know, his offensive line did fail him on a few critical plays in that game. And, he was out there kind of on an island almost, and he, again, he was not spectacular, but I don't think he was nearly as bad as some people make him out to be. I think you heard Ron Jaworski, I think I heard him say this morning on Mike and Mike, like, oh, Tom was off yesterday. Tom was off. I don't know if he was that off. I mean, I think he had one bad throw that cost him, but even that wasn't a turnover, you know? I mean, Brady's always going to protect the ball, and, you know, he kept his team in it. Why Bill Belichick on the two-point conversion took the ball out of Brady's hands is a mystery to me, because Brady was hot in the second half. They finally get their first touchdown of the game, and then Belichick tries to outsmart the room again when it didn't call for it. And instead of letting Tom Brady make the decision when they needed that two-point conversion ultimately to have any shot of coming back, he puts it in Shane Vereen's hands and runs Shane Vereen up the gut. He didn't even run LeGarrette Blount up the gut. He ran the scat back up the gut for the two-point conversion, and he got stuffed. I mean, that was just hard to watch if you were rooting for the Patriots, I think. I think Belichick, and I think he knows it too, because in the post-game interview, you heard Bill Belichick say that he cost the team, and I think he may have been referring to that two-point conversion decision. You know, I think the Patriots had a fantastic season given what they were working with. I picked them to win that game yesterday, and I think, you know, under different circumstances, maybe they could have had a shot, but I do think the better team won. And I think that, you know, there's nothing really for them to hang their head about. But I do think that from a bigger picture standpoint, I think New England has to be they have to go into the offseason ready to reload. I mean, they've just wasted too many of Tom Brady's golden years, no pun intended, on teams that weren't just all that high on talent. And I think part of that goes back to the fact that they've won Super Bowls handing the ball to Antoine Smith and throwing to David Patton and Deion Branch and David Givens and these guys. You know, I mean, if you can win Super Bowls like that, and then you bring in Randy Moss and you don't win a Super Bowl, I think that would lead you to believe that maybe you don't need a stud receiver or something like that. I don't think that that's the case, though. You have Edelman, you have Colley, you have Amendola. That's all the same guy, basically. You have three versions of the same dude. You only need one of those guys. Get rid of those other two guys and then go out and get an actual big-name receiver. They could have traded for Josh Gordon this year of the Browns. Josh Gordon led the league in receiving yards this year, and he only played 14 games. Can you imagine if Belichick had actually pulled the trigger and traded a second-round pick, which is reportedly what Cleveland was asking for, and picked up Josh Gordon? And now you have Brady and Gordon hooking up? I mean, especially if Gronkowski doesn't get hurt. Can you imagine an offense if you have Edelman doing what he was doing out of the slot with Brady throwing to Gordon and Gronkowski? And then, you know, you mix in the run game, the three-headed monster with Vereen out of the backfield catching passes, and then Ridley and Blunt. I mean, that's a totally different offense in that situation. Now, obviously, Gronk ended up getting hurt, but they still had a shot at bringing in somebody like Josh Gordon, who's a playmaker, and he's a difference maker, and they passed on that opportunity. You know, I personally have this theory, and this is something that I've been, you know, kind of playing close to the vest a little bit, but I'm going to go ahead and let y'all in on the secret. I think Bill Belichick thinks he's smarter than he is, and he's brilliant. I'm not saying he's not a great coach, and I think this is the best coaching job he's ever done, arguably. Maybe with the 0-1 season, when the Patriots won their first Super Bowl. But I think Belichick thinks he's so smart, and I think he wants to prove that he can win without Tom Brady, and I think that's part of the reason why the Patriots are always making plans for the future. Every time you see them, they're making plans for the future. They're always going out of their way to try to, they're always trading back in the draft, they're always doing stuff like that, they're never spending a ton of money in free agency, and it's because they always want to be set up for the future, and they want to try to win now with a group of guys that might not be talented enough to get the job done. And I think it's hurting Tom Brady. You know, he's the one that's getting hurt at the end of it, because people are talking about him like, oh, well, he hasn't won a Super Bowl in 10 years, or the Patriots haven't won a Super Bowl since Spygate and all this other stuff, which, even though that's true, it's not really fair to Brady, because none of those facts erase what he's already accomplished, even though people want to make it out to be that way. But I think Belichick's mindset is he wants to try to set things up for when Brady's no longer there, because he knows how crucial number 12 is to that team and to that offense. And so once he leaves, it's going to be on Belichick to stem the tide, assuming he doesn't retire as well. And I just feel like he's always going out of his way to try to prepare for the future, and he's not necessarily taking care of the present. Well, he's wasted a lot of Tom Brady's best years by not putting necessarily the best product out there around him. And I think it's got to stop. I think Brady needs to go in there and definitively say, I need weapons, just like they did in 06 when they lost to the Colts in the AFC Championship game. And they came back loaded with Randy Moss, Wes Welker, Dante Stallworth. They came back with legitimate receiving threats. And Brady goes out, he throws 50 touchdowns, and the Patriots went 18-0 and nearly won the Super Bowl. So, you know, I think that it's going to take another one of those type of off seasons for the Patriots to really, really be able to push through, get back to the Super Bowl, and win it, because it doesn't look like Denver's going anywhere, and you got to figure somebody else in the AFC is going to pop up. But with Brady, they always have a shot, and it's just a shame to see that, you know, it seems like these latter years are kind of going to waste. We're going to talk more about the Super Bowl in the coming weeks. And but I just wanted to touch on it real quick. It's obviously going to be a great matchup. We have the best offense and the best defense in the league. Best defense typically wins. You know, you have the whole Peyton Manning outdoors in the cold narrative probably at work. And it's going to be really fascinating to see how he performs, especially against the number one defense in the league. Right now, y'all, I'm going to tell you, I'm leaning towards the Seahawks. I had the Seahawks at the beginning of the season. I still need to see more from Peyton Manning in the postseason before I'm really become a believer that he's not going to give games away when they matter. And, you know, Seattle can force turnovers, and if they can turn Peyton Manning over, you know, I don't know if that defense is going to be able to hold up necessarily. The Broncos really aren't built for that kind of weather, and the Seahawks are, frankly. And also, Denver's offense, as great as it was during the regular season, they averaged 38 a game in the regular season. They're down to 25 points a game in the playoffs against San Diego and New England, two teams that really don't have juggernaut defenses. So when you consider that those defenses aren't all that great to begin with, I'm not really sure how, you know, we can look at the Seattle Seahawks and say, okay, Denver's going to go in there and drop 30 on Seattle, given the climate and given the stakes, you know, the big game like that. I don't really see Denver putting up a ton of points against the Seahawks. If they're scoring 25 against San Diego and New England, I don't think it's unreasonable to shave 5 points off of that and say they're going to score around maybe 20 against Seattle. And I don't know if 20 points is going to be enough, because Denver's built on offense. So I don't know if they can win a Super Bowl when they only score 20 points. Meanwhile, Seattle's gave up 14.4 points per game during the regular season, and they're giving up 16 points per game in the playoffs. So, you know, again, Seattle's defense seems to be as legit as anything. And even though Denver's offense is historic, it's hard to see Denver putting up a ton of points against this defense. It's just difficult to actually see that happening. But Peyton Manning has the opportunity to exercise all the demons. He can exercise the Brady Belichick demon, the big game, the playoff, the cold weather. He can knock it all out in 1 year and have arguably pretty much cap off the greatest quarterback season of all time this year. So we'll see if he can do it.
Don't make me put one of y'all in the grave. I'm playing with money y'all niggas save. The pain I'ma cause is something y'all couldn't phase. Couple niggas shot, just one of y'all niggas brave. Rushing them to the ER, rushing me to the stage. It's the soul day three, nothing we need to say. Leave the handguns at home, fuck them, just bring the K's. For the homies in the county with nothing is eating trays. Since I started eating, my motto was eat away. Top five is always followed by DOA. Thought I was on top when I bottled the Kia, yay. Then I went straight from the block to the VMAs. The way the hands move on the clock, you'd be amazed. You just feel a burn, nigga, you don't see the blaze. Take a good look in my eyes, you see the haze. Right, left, life or death, either ways. Same tough guys will cry when they see you laid. Never show your hand, they dying to see your spades. I'm married to the game, you dying to get engaged. You only gangster when the lions is in a cage. When life's worth nothing, the goons had it appraised. I might do the raid from a room with the beige. Bad bitch with me, doobie with the shades. If you ain't self-employed, then truly, you a slave.
Truly, to your ways, brain on your winter coat. Niggas burning bridges, then expecting you to send a boat. If I'm coming at your neck, think a bullet in the throat. Never gonna forget you niggas, got them written in my notes. I'ma send the goons, a snitch gon' send the folks. They gon' kill you just cause, don't make me send a loaf. New blue hunnids, spinning C notes. Fresh pair of Tims, vintage peacoats. I'ma stand up nigga, never been a joke. Riding since pedal bikes with reflectors in the spokes. I slept up from behind, put the game in the yoke. You apply a little pressure and them rookies finna choke. Niggas looking washed up as something in a soap. Looking like Adrian Bronner in a ropes. My shoes is two racks, I should be in the slopes. Might come through in the bubble, same way they send a poke. Parading down Fifth Ave like I'm in a float. That new 850 push button like a remote. Controller's hard to have, especially when you broke. They sleep because they eating, but you hungry and you woke. Shorty mouth wet, but her strength is in a stroke. Greatest of all time, so her name has been the GOAT. She say you got the people waiting for it, then it's dope. The game is fucked up, but if you back, then it's hope.